question number one. What did you think about the comments the media tried to run with regarding Trevor Lawrence and his love of the game, or somewhat lack thereof? I thought it was kind of silly, but I want to get your thoughts.
I didn't even pay attention to it, Bill.
Good for you.
I'm going to be real honest to you, because when I saw the – it was almost like clickbait to me, and I really didn't get into the story. I saw something about it on the, you know, one of the shows, and they were talking about it. I'm like, we don't have a combine. You know, you go to pro days, you see these guys, you've watched all this tape. The kid's won in high school, he's won in college. Has he lost games? Yeah. But has he competed every time I've watched him play? Has he shown me that he wants to compete hard? I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't even pay attention to that. I really didn't, because then you start chasing the rabbit hole of, okay, let's find. It's just, I don't know. It wasn't one of those things that I felt I had to be on the know for. And there's too many things out here that are things that you need to know. That wasn't one to me. I've had enough tape of watched Trevor of, watch games. I've been at spring games. I've been at their real games. It was just one of those things that, like, really? Are we resorting to this now? do we have not enough to talk about that we have to go to this? It was just one of those, I'm sure, like you, really, are we doing this now?
I think before the LSU National Championship game in 19, when LSU obviously was on a run, Trevor Lawrence had only lost, was it one game, and it was a high school game? They actually went back and interviewed the head coach, or maybe it was the quarterback from the other team who was now at a small college. They had to go back and search that far to find somebody who was on a team that beat Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that interesting that you can win and be that successful, but then they still look to say, well, you know, you don't have an interest in the game, or whatever the article was saying. And I agree with you. There has been too many instances where I've watched him compete to know the kid loves to play ball, and he plays it at a pretty high level. Now, is he going to be – here's the thing that I start kind of going towards. Is he going to be the next surefire guy in the league? I don't know. None of us know. And I think that's the part that you start looking to parse out different things to see – if a guy can do it. I'll say this with the league too. They're quicker to make a judgment on a kid first year one, year two than they used to be, because young guys are playing a lot earlier. They don't have that, hey, we're going to let you sit behind, you know, 12-year NFL veteran, 13-year veteran to learn the game. If they're paying you that money, you have to come right in. And sometimes that's not a good thing. Guys like Sam Darnold are starting to see it, where he's now getting another lease on life, where a guy like Teddy Bridgewater may have to go somewhere else. And both of these guys were first, you know, not first player picks, but first round draft picks, or high picks. So you're starting to see it play out where just because you're a high pick doesn't mean you're granted at least the 3 to 4, maybe 5 years that some of those guys used to get 10 years ago.
I'm with you. Yeah, I think Trevor Lawrence, there's no questioning his want and love for the game. Now, I have had Pro Bowl NFL players. Now, I haven't talked to that many. Obviously, I'm a college guy. But the ones that move here because of the Titans, right? And they end up on little league teams, or kids do with my kids, so I get to know them that way.
Yeah.
I've had a few of them tell me, And I want to get your experience with this in the college game and the NFL game, Bill. And I'm talking about Pro Bowl players. Tell me, Bill, I'm not that big of a football fan. I don't watch it. I do it because I'm really good at it, and I make a lot of money at it. It'd be dumb not to do it. But I'm not watching games, and I'm not, you know, the TV and on all weekend, and I'm just not into all that stuff. Now, that happens. I don't know how common it is, but, and Buck, all the teams you've been on, some players are more passionate about the overall love of the game than others. That's normal.
Yeah, and Bill, I think you hit on a good point. So think about this. When you are it's a grind to play in the NFL.
Right.
And I'm not saying that, like, oh, feel sorry for those guys or feel sorry for me. But physically and mentally, it's a grind. It's different than it used to be now than it was before, where you had and I'm not saying one is better. You know, some people say, well, you glorify two-a-days or three-a-days. Well, we had to do those. So you think about the time you spend watching film, the time you spent on the field. There was a decompression when you got home. You didn't want to always watch football. You would look at it because you may have a team that's coming up or one of your boys is playing somewhere else. But there were times where you just went home and you just wanted to do something else. You wanted to read a book. You wanted to just get away from it because that was your job. That was your grind. Now, fast forward, when you retire, you get closer to it. If your kids like it or if you are following college sports, you get back into it. But think about how hard it is to watch film. I mean, you watch a film every day, and then you go home and say, okay, I'm going to sit here and watch a game that's a little bit slower because you can't see all 22 anyway.
Right.
So I totally get when guys say that. I think the biggest thing is it's your experience in the league too. How many times have you been cut? How many coaches have told you you're going to get a chance to play and you walk in the meeting room, hey, we need your playbook. We just signed somebody. Sorry about that. I mean, those things happen all the time. And people only see the glorified sense of it where, oh, yeah, you know, you got to play in the NFL. It's a great experience. I would never trade it for anything in the world. But it's a job. And just like any other job, what do you do to get away from radio? You go cook. You go do stuff with your kids. You get away from talking radio. When you see people out and about, I know I do, I love talking to them, but I'm not going to sit there and have an hour conversation about something. I'll talk to you about anything else but sports sometimes just because that's what we do all day, every day, right? So
that's
true. Totally get when guys have said that, and I know what they mean, and it's just like anybody else. If they're in a profession, and I've met plenty of people like you have, they're lawyers, doctors, entertainers, they don't want to talk about what they do every day. They want to talk about something else because that's their job. They want to enjoy life on the other side, and I think that's where we have to be careful about saying, oh, they don't love the game. No, they love the game. They just hate the business side of the game, so they try to get away from it because they know that's a part of it.
I'll give you another angle. Good friend of ours and Crazy Charlie and some of the audience, Brian Benio. When he came out of high school in the mid-'80s, you and Brian are about the same age. He came out in about 85. And the Max Emfinger, you remember those recruiting rankings even back then, he was ranked the number two linebacker in America coming out of the Atlanta area. Everybody wanted him, and he went to Ohio State. And he was a midtermer, too. Early enrollees were very rare back then. He was a midtermer. So this is mid-'80s. Gets up there in about a year and a half into it, Buck. He's having some back problems. Goes, gets some x-rays. They look at his neck and say, you're done. You can never play again. You're done. And he said once he finished up at Ohio State, graduated, he didn't want to watch football for 2 years after that.
Mm-hmm.
He was so beat down because of the experience. So, you know, things happen to people, and it's different for everybody. But he said it was – and now, obviously, you and I know he's bashed it. He loves watching. He's a Buckeye fan. He donates. He's up there helping. I mean, but, yeah, he said after that, Buck, he couldn't even turn on the TV. He was so depressed.
I often tell the story, you know, when I got cut by the Colts in 95 – I was pissed off. I mean, I was upset. I was hurt. And, you know, I really didn't want to have anything to do with football for a few weeks, maybe a couple of months. And then my wife, who's a lawyer, by the way, you know, we were talking, and she said, I don't know why you're so upset. I said, what do you mean this team cut me? She said, well, if you have read your contract like I did, you get paid if they go to the playoffs. If they win the Super Bowl, you'll get a portion of that. So I was like, So I started watching them, and then they made that AFC championship run. A lot of my buddies were on there. I mean, and I got the chance to celebrate from the outside looking in because I knew what they put into that. I got cut about the fourth game of the season, and they went on that run and had a chance to get to the Super Bowl. I still think AB Aaron Bailey caught that pass in the end zone, but, you know, Quentin Coriat with the almost interception, and he caught that would have probably feel the game as well. So you remember those moments, but it was, it made me more invested, and I got caught up in that whole captain comeback, you know, era and the AFC championship run because I knew a lot of those guys and I knew how hard we had worked in that off season to get prepared for the season, even though I wasn't a part of the team.
Charles Arbuckle with us. What are you hearing about the draft? Is there anything that's jumping out at you right now?
Not really, Bill. It seems like this week, this is the week for me, it seems like, where it really starts. I think between now and the draft, you start hearing all kind of rumblings. It's just been a weird year because you don't have a combine. You know, you don't have – some guys are doing two pro days. Some are doing very limited pro days. You got the teams now dictating what they want to see them do at – maybe the second pro day or the first pro day. It's like we're just kind of seeing it in a different kind of vacuum. I think this week we'll hear a lot more. I would be interested to hear how the jockeying for the quarterbacks is going to go, but also some of these other players that are starting to rise up the board. This is usually when I start really paying close attention because I think this week leading into the draft is when you really hear some of that, and they can't contain – the noise factor, right? It's going to get out. Some of it planted, but just sometimes it just gets out. So I really think from this day forward or this week forward, we're going to really start seeing some of that, the noise that, you know, this trade is going to happen, that's going to happen. That's where I really lock in on the draft and kind of start trying to listen to see what's going to happen with what teams and, you know, who needs what the most. Are there going to be some trades? Are there, you know, whatever it is, it always seems to start happening like this week right into the draft.
Did you get a chance to watch any of Alabama's spring game and Bryce Young?
I did. I was impressed with the tight end, Cameron Latu. Is that his name? Is that how you pronounce his name? Yeah. I like him because he wears 81 anyway.
Right.
but he, when he caught that pass down the middle of the field, that seam route, and kind of shook the safety, kind of chilled him and got by him, I was like, okay, that's all I really need to see. This kid's going to be pretty good. They've been talking about him a lot, but I hadn't seen him. But Bryce Young, what was impressive with him was – throwing from different arm slots, and that Nick did not get in his grill as badly as you've seen him sometimes with others. He was kind of, he was coaching him, and I love with Nick with the pink jacket on, walking around, talking trash to the he really gets on the defensive guys more than offensive guys. But anyway, that's where he loves. That's his home. But he can see the thing with Nick, and I know this to be true because I was in Cleveland for a couple of weeks. I had a cup of coffee there, got cut. But the one thing that I know being he was, you know, the defensive coordinator. He knows where everyone's supposed to be, what step they're supposed to take, how the angle they're supposed to get there. And it's amazing how his memory recall is when you're watching him draw up things and tell you stuff even on the offensive side. But that's a whole nother show. We could do that. He is really that good, and he's kind of a savant when it comes to defense and putting people in the right place. Plus, he has great talent, so I'll give him that. But what I liked about Bryce Young was that his ability with a porous offensive line, it's spring. You probably got some guys that shouldn't be playing or guys that were hurt. I know that. But his ability to move and scramble, he's going to take some chances, and you can see that with that one pick six should have taken place. But I watched about a quarter and a half, and I thought he really showed some good things with his ability to get out of trouble but also throw the ball. And I thought he had a little bit more arm strength than I thought he had. He showed me some things that I didn't know he had, but I had been hearing about him. So I'm really excited to watch him play and progress in our offense and see, okay, Bill, which wide receiver is going to step up next, right? It doesn't matter if the guys graduate. The Slim Reaper's gone. Okay, yeah, we need another one. Come on, here you go. They get the best players, but they get the best players developed the best to play you every single week. And I think that's why Nick and those guys have done a nice job. Whether you love Alabama or hate them, they just know how to get talent in there, and those guys get there, and they punch in the mouth, and they dare you to punch them back.
The receiver that everybody's talking about, not tight end group, but receiver is this Ajay Hall out of Florida. They say is Julio Jones physically. That's what they're saying.
The apex kid, the kid that was just going up. I mean, it's like he would tell them, I need you to throw it as high as you can throw it, and I'll go get it. And this is what I told you before about Hartley Dykes, that I have at a high school level and college before he start getting his knee hurt. Hartley had a 40, he may say 46. I think it was a 44. What's the difference? 2 inches, right? 44-inch vertical. But at 6'5", Bill. And he wasn't the fastest guy, but I can remember quarterbacks throwing the ball at Bay City and at Oklahoma State, and he would just go up and get it. And that Hall kid, every time they threw it up, you knew he was, after the first one, I was like, oh, he's coming down with this. Oh, yeah, he's got that one. And it was like, hey, throw it as high as you want, and I'll jump out of this stadium and go get the football, okay? And we're good. So there were some poor throws, and he still went up and got it, man. That was pretty doggone impressive.
Buck, we'll see you next week, sir. Have a good one.
All right, Bill. Take care.
Thank you, sir.